This is Cross Hope, a daily word of hope and inspiration with Randy Snyder, Senior Minister of Crossview Christian Church. Now, with today's message from Cross Hope, here's Randy Snyder.
Ministers oftentimes are guilty of using phrases from the pulpit and assuming that people know what you're talking about. And I remind myself constantly, if I use a term, I shouldn't assume that everybody knows what I'm talking about. For instance, sometimes a minister will talk about the great wedding feast, and he's referring to heaven, and people say, well, what's that? I was at a wedding reception, you know, last week, and what's that mean, the great wedding feast? The Bible uses the illustration or metaphor or whatever term you want to use, the church is the bride of Christ. And the groom, in a sense, in a figurative sense, is Christ. And that in heaven there's going to be the great wedding feast or wedding supper where we celebrate the consummation of history. And that's talked about in the Bible. And so when you use that terminology, I think it helps to explain to people that's what you mean. And because I'm going to reference that kind of indirectly through a story told by Max Lucado. Engaged people, people that are engaged to be married, are obsessed with preparation. The right dress, the right weight, the right hair, the right tux. They want everything to be right. Why? So their fiancé will marry them? No. Just the opposite. They want to look their best because their fiancé is marrying them. The same is true for us. In theory, we want to look our best for Christ. We want our hearts to be pure and our thoughts to be clean. We want our faces to shine with grace and our eyes to sparkle with love. We want to be prepared. Why? In hopes that he will love us? No, just the opposite, because he already does. The Lord already does love us. You are spoken for. You are engaged, set apart, called out, a holy bride, a holy people. Forbidden waters hold nothing for you. You have been chosen for heaven. Don't settle for one-night stands in the arms of a stranger. What a line. Don't settle for one-night stands in the arms of a stranger. Be obsessed with your wedding date. Guard against forgetfulness. Be intolerant of memory lapses. Write yourself notes. Memorize verses. Do what you need to remember. Aim at what is in heaven. Think only about the things that are in heaven. Colossians 3. You are engaged to royalty, and your prince is coming to take you home. You understand that analogy now after having explained some of those terms. Today is the day in the series from 1 Thessalonians where the Apostle Paul starts talking about the second coming of Christ. Even though this book is referenced as a book about the second coming of Christ, if you've been here at all during this series, you know that he's talked a lot about his relationship with these people, how much he loved them, like a mother loves her children, like a nursing mother is really the analogy used, loves her children. And we loved you like as a father loves his children. He talked about his relationship with the church at Thessalonica over and over in the first four chapters. And then today, I think he builds up to this. He starts the first word about the last days, about talking about the second coming of Christ. And before I even read it, I want to share this with you today. Every man, every woman in this room, you either come to the place in your life where you believe in the second coming of Christ or you don't. There's no middle ground. There's nothing kind of in the gray area in the middle. We either believe that Jesus Christ is going to return as he promised he would. The one who conquered death said, I'm coming back to claim my own. He said, I go to prepare a place for you that where I am, that's where you'll be. You either believe that or you don't. And there are Christian people, in all honesty, who struggle with that.
Well, this is an important message from the book of 1 Thessalonians. It's the first time in the book of Thessalonians that Paul talks about the second coming of Christ. Tune in tomorrow, XM Sirius 131, the Family Talk Channel.
I want to give you a little context, because context is everything. There were people in the church of Thessalonica, some of you will remember this, who thought Jesus was going to return at any time. They lived in daily anticipation. So much so that some of them quit their jobs and said, I'm not going to work. Jesus is coming back. And the problem that developed was that some people said, well, I'll live off my brother-in-law. Thank goodness somebody's working in this family. And I'll eat at his table, or I'll eat at my father-in-law's table. And so people became dependent upon other people while they were spiritually waiting for the return of Christ. And Paul deals with that in both books. You continue living your life. In fact, in 2 Thessalonians, he says, if you don't work, you don't eat. That's what Paul said to people. It's a very strong, powerful statement. But having said that, here's what people were worried about. There were people in the church at Thessalonica who lost a parent, who lost a brother or sister, lost a spouse, lost a child, and they were worried, if Jesus returns while we're alive and they're already dead, what happens to them? And there was this fear and anxiety and angst about what happens to my loved one who's not going to be here when the Lord returns. And Paul speaks to that. And that all will crystallize for you as we study it in verse 13 that says, we do not want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep, verse 13, and grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. Listen carefully. The Lord doesn't want you to be ignorant about his second coming. You've got his word on it. He doesn't want you scrambling in 2013 saying, you know, I don't know what I believe. Gee whiz, I wish I know. I know there's people at church, they've got it figured out. But we're not to figure out a date or a time, but we're to believe, come to the place where we know that Jesus is coming back. Have you ever been wrong in telling when somebody's coming and you expected somebody at your house at 4 and they didn't come till 5 and they said, I told you 5. And you said, oh, I thought you said 4. We've all been mistaken in terms of the time of someone's arrival. But you know when someone tells you, I'm coming. And Jesus Christ has promised to return. And Paul says, I don't want you to be uninformed or ignorant about it and not to grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. Listen carefully. There are two kinds of people here. There are people, when they lose a loved one, who grieve, cry tears, who weep, but they have hope. And then there are people who grieve who have no hope. And there's a big difference. I know this sounds melodramatic, and I know maybe it's a little over the top for some of you for me to say this, but I really believe this. You could drop me into a funeral home anywhere in the country, and not say a word to me about the people, their background, whether they went to church, doesn't matter what they're wearing, it doesn't matter anything. And I can tell, I can sense in my spirit, these are people who have hope. And I can also tell you and sense in my spirit, here are people who are grieving, who don't have hope. And once again, Paul says it's A or B. You either grieve, we all grieve when we lose a loved one, we weep. We shake with tears, we shake with emotion when we lose a loved one. But we have hope, because we have hope in the second coming of Christ and his coming again. We have a promise of heaven. That's the kind of hope we have. And then there's the grief of people who have no hope. And then when you die, it's over. When you die, that's it. And that's a hopeless kind of situation to live in. I want to focus some time on verse 14. This is really important. We believe that Jesus died and rose again, so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him.
Well, I want you to make every effort to hear part 3 of this message from 1 Thessalonians about the second coming of Christ. Tomorrow at same time, same place, XM Sirius 131.
I want to focus some time on verse 14. This is really important. We believe that Jesus died and rose again, so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. Two statements of belief. We believe Jesus died and rose again. Stop. I want you to know this is one of the most important things that you'll ever believe or not believe. You'll reject in belief in your life that Jesus died and rose again. A lot of people in churches believe that Jesus lived, and they believe he died. He died as a martyr. He died as our example. But they don't believe that he rose again. And Paul didn't say, we believe that Jesus died. He said, we believe that Jesus died and rose again. It's important. The word belief is the most important word in your vocabulary. Why? Because you're the result of what you believe. One week we talk about biology of belief, meaning that what you believe physically oftentimes impacts how you feel. What you feel and what you believe impacts how you feel in terms of your physical health. Belief is biology. Belief has power. And what you believe makes you the man you are. This shocks people when I say it, but I believe it with all my heart. Tell me what you believe about Jesus Christ, and I can tell you a little bit what kind of husband you are. Tell me what you believe about the Lord, and I can tell you a little bit what kind of wife you are. Because what you are as a husband or wife, what you are as a father or mother, as a son or daughter, impacted by what you believe about eternity and what you believe about the Lord. And then he says, we not only believe that Jesus died and rose again, we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. Paul deals with this issue. Those people who lost a son or daughter, those people who lost a brother or sister, those people who lost a mom or dad, you don't need to worry. The second coming of Christ will not be impacted either way if you're alive or dead. You're going to experience the second coming of Christ. Listen carefully. The second coming of Christ is discovered in such language. Nobody's going to say, you know, we were out of town that day. Nobody's going to be able to say, well, we were on vacation. We were miles away. Everyone will see it. Everyone will hear the command, the kalusma, the word that's used to describe the command. Everyone will hear the voice of the archangel. Everyone will hear the trumpets, whatever is going to happen. It's a worldwide event that will happen at the same moment. And we will all know. I can remember years ago people saying that that was physically impossible. Do you feel that now with the technology of how we're able to communicate and technology around the world? You know, I was doing a wedding in Switzerland in 2011, and I left my cell phone on, and it beeped, and it was from Chick-fil-A right during the wedding, you know, telling me there's a sale going on at Chick-fil-A and, you know, in Centerville. I mean, in other words, you can't get away from communication. We're worldwide communication all over the place. No one's going to be able to say we missed the second coming of Christ. Let's read verse 15. According to the Lord's own word, we tell you that we who are still alive and who are left till the coming of the Lord will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so will we be with the Lord forever.
Well, I don't know about you, but I find that incredible, and yet I believe it to be true. We'll continue this message on the second coming of Christ from 1 Thessalonians tomorrow, same time, same place on XM Sirius 131, the Family Talk Channel. God bless you.
I tell stories that different stories have different impact on people, and I always note the stories that people talk about. And a story I told 2 years ago in 2011 about a woman by the name of Evelyn Birch from Martinsburg, West Virginia, got a lot of response. Here's what she writes. She talks about being broke, divorced, living alone in a dilapidated mountain shack in West Virginia. Here's her story. I used to believe in the American dream, which meant a job, a mortgage, cable TV, credit cards, warranties, and success. What a combination. I wanted it and worked toward it like everyone else, all of us chasing the same thing. 1 year through a series of unfortunate events, it all fell apart for me. I found myself homeless and alone. And here's what she said. All I had were the clothes on my back, a pickup truck, and $56. That was it. All I had, clothes on my back, a pickup truck, and $56. I scoured the countryside for some place I could rent for the cheapest possible amount. Believe it or not, I came upon a shack in an isolated hollow 4 miles up a winding road overlooking the Potomac River in West Virginia. It was abandoned, full of broken glass and rubbish. When I pried off the plywood over a window, I climbed in. She didn't go in the front door. She climbed in through an open window. I found something I could put my hands to. I hadn't been alone for 25 years. I was scared to death. But I hoped the hard work would distract me and heal me. I found the owner of the house eventually and rented the place, this broken down shack, for $50 a month. I took a bedroll, a broom, a rope, some cooking gear, and a gun. And I cleared a corner to camp in while I worked. The locals knew nothing about me, but slowly they started teaching me the art of being a neighbor. They dropped off blankets, candles, tools, and canned deer meat, and they began sticking around to chat. They asked me if I wanted to meet their cousin Albie or go fishing or maybe get drunk some night. They started to teach me a belief in a different American dream, not the one of individual achievement, but of neighborliness. Men would stop by with wild berries, ice cream, truck parts, and bullets. They would call on her with bullets to see if I was up for dating. I wasn't, but they were civil anyway. The women on the mountain worked harder than any I'd ever met. They taught me how to use a whetstone to sharpen my knife, how to store food in the creek, and how to keep it cold and safe. I learned to keep enough food for an extra plate for company. What I had believed in and all those things I thought were the necessary accoutrements for a civilized life were non-existent in this place. Up on the mountain, my most valuable possessions were my relationships with other people. Listen to that again. That's an important statement. Up on the mountain, my most valuable possessions were my relationships with other people. Why do I tell that story for a second time? For this reason. The day's coming, folks, when it won't matter if you live in a Beverly Hills mansion in California or you live in a shack in West Virginia, up on a mountainside overlooking the Potomac River where you have to pry the plywood off the window to get in and live in the midst of broken glass and rubbish. It won't matter. None of that will matter when Jesus Christ comes to claim his own and to return. Jesus said this, I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there you will be also. Do you get that, the import of that statement? I go, Jesus said, to prepare a place, a real place. It's the word topos. We get the word topographical from. I go to prepare a topos for you, that where I am, there you will be also. I say verse 18 for the last. I want to read it now. Therefore, encourage each other with these words. Paul wrote this not to be something to frighten people, but to bless people. This isn't a message of fear. It's a message of hope. It isn't, you better watch out. Jesus Christ is coming back. You're in big trouble, pal. It's a message of hope that the one who conquered death, who walked out of a grave alive, is the one who's coming back to claim people like you and me. I want to tell you a story that I don't mean to end with kind of a dark note, but there's hope in it too. A minister by the name of Gary Demarest was ministering in Buffalo, New York. He said, I just moved from a ministry in Buffalo, New York to La Cañada Church, La Cañada, Flint Ridge, California, in the Los Angeles area. He said, at the same time, my best friend just moved to a nearby church as well. So here's two guys that are best friends in the ministry, and they end up in the Los Angeles area basically the same year, and they were thrilled to be together. Here's what he says. Gary says, we were both delighted with the prospects of living near each other for the first time ever. During the first week, we got together for golf. The anticipation of our future together was high. After we had teed off, walking down the first fairway, my friend said to me, Gary, do you really want the Lord to come right now? In my experience, wanting the Lord to come is different from living in the hope of his coming. On a beautiful winter day in a warm climate in Southern California, playing golf with one's best friend, looking forward to the new challenges and opportunities, I can't say that I really wanted Christ to return. I think he's just being honest. There have been other times, however, when I have wished for his coming. You see, I recall a very low point in my life when I was faced with a very difficult situation that brought into question my continuation in ministry. I remember that night driving down the freeway, thinking of turning the steering wheel into a concrete abutment. Through my scalding tears on my face, thinking of the possibility of suicide, I cried out, Lord Jesus, come. Please come. Lord Jesus, please come. Whether I want him to return depends a great deal on how I feel about my life and my work at any given time. But while those desires ebb and flow, I can consciously live in the awareness that someday he will come. Not on the basis of my needs and desires, but by the will of God. What's my point in sharing his story? Simply this. I don't know where you're at in the spectrum of everything's cool, everything's great, I'm enjoying my life and my friends, and it's just, life's a ball. Or whether you've been at a point where you've thought about pulling the car into a concrete abutment on the freeway, or somewhere in between. But here's my point. You live long enough on this earth, the day is going to come where you're going to say, either through your tears or through a dry face, Lord, come. Jesus, come back. The Greek word is Maranatha. It means Jesus, come quickly. And that day will come. If it hasn't already, if you haven't had a moment like that, got news for you, you will. I don't know when it'll be. It may be years from now. It may be months from now. It may be days from now. It may be tomorrow. But the time will come when you say, Jesus, come quickly. This is the first word about the last things in the book of Thessalonians. Jesus is coming back. Your decision, either believe that this is true or it's not. Decide. Decide to believe that the Christ who conquered death is the Christ who's coming back. Don't ever forget that.
Well, this series will continue Monday on XM Sirius 131, the Family Talk Channel. God bless you.
You have been listening to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. For more information or to listen to or download a copy of today's message, go to crosshope.org. That web address again is www.crosshope.org. Be sure to tune in each weekday at this same time to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. This program has been a production of Cross Hope Ministries.